Alright, who are you?
I'm Norman Guadagno. I'm the director of marketing for Visual Studio Team System.
Okay. And what are we talking about? You got some announcements for us.
I have a few really great announcements, and I'm excited. The first of which, everyone's been wondering what's going on with Visual Studio, what's coming next. And the most important thing that I'm going to tell you is the name.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited. People have been on the edge of their seat wondering what the name's going to be. Visual Studio?
Yeah.
2010.
2010. Sounds futuristic.
It does sound futuristic, and I'm still debating whether I say 2010 or 2010, so
okay.
I'm eager for input from people.
I'm sure people will tell you.
Will tell us. So, yeah. Visual Studio 2010. We have an official name, and this way everything can start rolling into that. We also have an official name for .NET Framework.
Okay.
.NET Framework 4.0.
All right. We increased it plus 0.5, right?
We're definitely dating.
0.5 more features.
0.5 more features. And I'm excited about the name because everyone's like, what are you going to call it? It makes it simple.
Okay. So let's go through that. There's a number of things, and obviously you had mentioned before there's a sort of a rollout on how much stuff you're announcing, but what's sort of the key stuff that's new that are going to get developers salivating?
Yeah, there's a few things. So part of the announcement we're doing now is obviously the name. And then we're talking about some of the big themes that we're setting up for Visual Studio 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Visual Studio 2010. I'll bounce back and forth in this whole discussion, Dan. We can figure it out. and then we're going to do some drill down. So some of the big themes that we're looking at across the entire Visual Studio family are about ALM. Application Lifecycle Management, and how we're democratizing that. We love the word democratizing. What it really means is we're making ALM available to everybody. We'll talk a little bit about.
Okay, so what does that mean? And we'll go through sort of the things, but I gotta. So what does that really mean? Love the title, democratizing.
It's great, isn't it? And we love that word, democratize. ALM is an interesting thing. When you think about the application lifecycle management, the investment we've made in it, the marketplace.
So people may be not familiar with the term application lifecycle management that may be doing things that are ALM related. What's it mean?
The short form of ALM is that there are multiple participants in the lifecycle of building a software product, from designers, architects, testers, developers, deployment, that they are all engaged in the process,
mm-hmm.
that there is a shared source and work item tracking and requirements that help drive the interaction amongst all of them, and that there is a way to monitor the flow from the very first concept of what business problem we're trying to solve to actual delivery and deployment of the application.
Okay.
And for some people, application lifecycle management means you have a source code management tool.
Right.
For other people, it means that you have source code management and requirements management and work item tracking and test integration and everything throughout all the lifecycle. So we sort of aim with Visual Studio Team System towards the bigger thing. Visual Studio Team System, as you may know, includes Team Foundation Server, mm-hmm. which is our core source code control work item tracking server. We include the developer edition, includes the test edition, includes the architecture edition, includes the database edition. We'll
mm-hmm.
talk a little bit later about developer and database because that's interesting too.
Sure.
So we've really had these different roles and how they play and work together in application development. For people who are using Visual Studio Professional, it's an opportunity to tap into the server when they move up to Team System and to be better able to participate with the other parts of the team.
Okay.
And so our democratization model, our democratization message really is that everyone gets a chance to play, and it makes it easier for everyone to get access to what are you doing? What am I doing? How do we work together to make the code successful?
So what does that mean in terms of products? Is it something that's, say, shifting down into the professional edition, or are there different connections between the products, or what's it actually mean?
A few things are going on. When we've always provided the ability in VS Pro, the professional edition, to tap into the server and become part of the life cycle. We provide a CAL. People can buy a CAL with VS Pro so they can get access to the server, so they can be part of the life cycle. In VSTS, there's a lot of functionality that we've delivered, and part of what we've been trying to do over the versions of VSTS is make that functionality that sometimes seems specialized more available to everyone in the lifecycle.
Okay.
The very specific thing that we're focused on, or one of the things we're focused on in 2010,
mm-hmm.
is architecture.
Okay.
And architecture, as you well know, and most of the folks listening know, and developers know, that oftentimes is done by the architects somewhere else.
Right, right.
And they go, and they pontificate, and then they bring back an architecture. Here you go.
Sure.
And part of what we believe is this democratization, particularly around architecture, is let's make the tools easy to use, let's make them available to everybody who wants to participate, and let's make them functional.
Sure.
So rather than somebody going off and creating an architecture and then handing it down and people have to follow it, and oftentimes
the impedance mismatch where it's like, they did this, but how does that actually translate into code?
That's right. That okay. is this huge mismatch, especially if somebody hands off a Visio file and says, this is your architecture. Works, but you can be better. And
sure.
with our architecture tools in 2010, we actually now have the ability to create models that are directly linked to code.
Okay.
And now, when using the various types of designers, you can create models that contain constraints. So let's take the very simple example. You're the architect. You create a three-tier application, and it is there's a presentation layer, there's an application layer, there's a data layer. Right? Very
sure.
straightforward. And you hand that off to me, the developer, and I say, oh, that looks great, but I'm going to go ahead and connect that presentation layer right to the data layer. And it's like, boy, that's an easier thing for me to do when I'm coding. I then have to check in my code. It validates against the model you created and immediately flags the fact that I violated one of the constraints you've placed on
Interesting.
The design.
Okay.
So you said, this layer has to talk to this layer. Before it can talk, but it can't talk directly to this layer.
Sure.
I've written code that says, whoops, bypass you, go through check-in, model says A, B, C, code is flagged, yep, you can't do that. So I have to go back in and fix it. I then go ahead and fix it, check
everything
in again, everything passes through. So now architecture moves out of the high, only some people can deal with it, and not practical, not democratized, into something that people can dive right into. And
Excellent.
You as a developer, or I as a developer, could go through and, hey, you know, I want to create a little bit of architecture just to do what I, see what I'm doing. And this is sometimes what I call the developer actually as the gopher or the what are those things that pop up when you whack-a-mole?
Whack-a-mole.
Right, so what do you really do when you're coding? Everybody does this. Coding, you look up and you think, how does this fit together? Right, you
sure.
take the big view. Right, you go back and forth like that. What happened in the past is when you pop up, you really didn't have tools to model the space
sure.
in which you were developing. Now, with the architecture tools and their easy availability and the fact that everyone can use them and the fact that they're live, you can pop up, oh, I want to look at the architecture. Oh, how does that work? Okay, I can go back to coding.
Okay.
And I think that's a really big breakthrough. And it's one of those things that when we think about how do we take team system, make it so that people are democratized, that's part of it.
Yeah. Now, are these like UML modeling tools? Because you mentioned they were visual designers, or how exactly does that work? I know some people are probably familiar with the architecture tools already, but like how, what's the difference? And say like class designers, like one sort of modeling tool that, mm-hmm. that actually does code generation.
It does exactly that. So you use the word UML. Which I'm glad you used it, because 2 weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we announced that we joined OMG, mm-hmm. and we are supporting UML, which was a big deal for us.
Sure.
And people are pretty excited about that. And part of the embracing UML was the notion that there are multiple types of models, and we want to be able to provide tools that can do that across different scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And by embracing UML, in fact, delivering a tool in the 2010 architecture tool that's a really powerful UML modeler. With the feedback we've gotten from the customers we've already shown it to and the analysts has been, that thing just rocks.
It's Excellent.
Really great. And now what we can do with UML too is think about UML as really looking at code at the logical layer. Right? UML is a big picture. How do all these pieces fit together? With the UML designers we have, you can build things at the code at the logical level. If you think about it from the bottom up, we've always also been very, very excited about the use of DSLs. And DSLs...
Domain-specific languages.
DSLs really are code up. They allow you to look at things more at the physical level. How does this actually work in the specific domain that I'm writing code for?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody, one of our architects coined the phrase UML plus DSL equal better code. I may be misquoting him on that. It's the way that we can say you can look at it top-down, you can look at it bottom-up, you can look at it logical, you can look at it physical, you can get better code in the middle. And by the way, now Microsoft supports UML, so I'm compatible with the other folks in my organization who may already be using UML.
Sure. Excellent. So we discussed a little bit in depth on democratizing ALM, but you mentioned there were other, things that you're talking about now.
We got so excited about that.
I
love the architecture space. I spent a lot of time in it, and it's pretty exciting. But a couple of other things that we're thinking about at the top level, and we're just hitting on the themes right now. You know that part of our great strategy is to make sure that we tell the market and our customers what we're doing because it's in response to what they've asked of us.
Sure.
And then we drip out little bits and pieces over time amongst the details of it. And here we're diving down into the details of VSTS. But a couple of the other themes that have driven Visual Studio 2010 have been such as delighting developers.
Sure.
And we've heard a lot from our customers time and time again. How do you make it such that when I get into Visual Studio, I'm going to have the time of my life? And I may be stretching the reality of that,
sure,
but we've heard that. And I think that it's true that we want to find ways to delight developers. We're not talking a lot about what we're doing on that right now, but when people think about what's the guiding principles for Microsoft as we developed VS 2010, it's really around democratizing ALM, delighting developers. We're going to create experiences, and we'll talk a lot more about them over the coming months, that create a much more enjoyable experience for the developers.
And this is sort of like bread and butter. As you're writing code, how do we make that experience for searching, navigating, writing,
all that
editing
good stuff
code
better? The things you do every day. Because, like it or not, most of the time, if you're a developer and you're using Visual Studio, your head's down in the IDE, having a good time.
Okay.
We want to make it better.
Okay.
And we're going to talk a lot more over the next few months about how we make that better. Likewise, we're looking at, again, one of the themes based on the input we've had is how do we embrace all those new technologies that are emerging? People are talking about the cloud. And I knew you'd ask a question about the cloud. Well, I beat you to it. How do we embrace the cloud?
Sure.
We're going to talk a lot more about that. Obviously, people know we have PDC coming up, and there's going to be some great discussion at PDC.
So are there Visual Studio 2010 sessions at PDC, just to give a plug for those?
There are Visual Studio 2010 sessions, VSTS 2010 sessions at PDC. Register for them. There's a great slate of content, and we're going to talk more about the very things we're discussing here.
Okay.
One of those things is, how are we embracing these new technologies and these emerging trends? And I think that that's an important component when you think about how are we embracing new platforms. That's an important component of how can this development system, VS, VSTS, .NET, enable me to be productive and develop great applications for the next 5 years and the next 10
sure
years. And 2010 is all about delivering the experiences that are great for everyone on the team that allow you to tap into the bigger, bolder picture of where we're going as an industry and where Microsoft is going in terms of the cloud and software plus services and the other things that we're getting involved in. We'll have a lot more announcements around that as well.
Okay. Team system. What do you say, other key areas that you're investing in? You talked about some of the stuff around architecture, but can you talk about some of the things for tasks or TFS or team collaboration?
Yeah, there's a few things. Architecture is a big thing for us, and we're excited about that box. Test is continue to add new tools to the test toolbox. That sounds good. New tools to the test toolbox.
Okay.
We are... it's important that we think about how we look at VSTS. Test is a component of the lifecycle. Quality is something that everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great set of test tools, and they help for the specific tester. How do I make sure I can run an automated test and be able to go through the process and I can test it across all scenarios? And how do we make the developers and the architects produce better quality code?
Sure.
One of the things we focused on, which is amazingly powerful, is how do I deal with the no repro scenario? I get bugs that I can't reproduce. And this is just the bane of developers' existence. And so we spent a lot of time understanding the no repro scenario and what can we do about it. The things that seem to happen a lot are that when a tester finds a bug, Doop. Okay, I found a bug. They shoot it over to the dev. The dev says, okay, let me bring it up. Let me try to reproduce this bug. Can't reproduce it. Ah, okay. The bug still exists somewhere. What has happened has been that the very state of the environment that the tester found the bug in is most likely not the state of the environment that the developer was using at that point. There's been new code checked in. There's been other variables in the environment that have changed.
Sure.
So being able to see historically what was going on when the tester found the bug and then recreating that for the developer when they're trying to reproduce the bug allows you to find so many more of these bugs that you couldn't reproduce previously. And so part of our tools in terms of being able to look at a historical debugging scenario is that you can now get that exact environment and be able to address those no repro scenarios.
That's pretty amazing. It's like black box when the plane crashes, you know, sort of exactly the instrumentation that's going on.
That's right, exactly what was going on.
So at a high level, how exactly does that work? Is it capturing all the details, operating system, environment variables, or how does it work? And is there a virtualization angle to that as well, so you can reproduce that exact scenario? So I'm running this version of Windows XP on, you know, with this service pack or something like that?
So I'll tell you a couple of things about it. One is it is capturing all of the environment variables. It's making sure you track what source code you've checked in, which branch you're on, all of the good things that are going on at that level, and then being able to reproduce that. Part of what makes that go, and you asked about TFS, is the rich code management and source code control we have in TFS.
Sure.
That's where all that data lives, so being able to go into TFS and say, okay, I knew what happened here, that's part of the value of TFS in this scenario. In terms of the virtualization, it doesn't directly connect there.
Mm-hmm.
And however, it's certainly something that we're thinking about as we look towards more and more virtualized environments and what can happen in those environments. And we'll actually probably be talking more about that over the next few months as well.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I think it's, I like your black box analogy, and sometimes you almost think of it as magic. I love magic because it really is that you're going back to this time when that tester was there, and oftentimes the tester doesn't have the ability nor the inclination to necessarily capture every single thing when they're writing up their bug report. And
right.
So you get rid of that problem altogether.
Exactly. Plus you can see in what cases the scenario works and doesn't work and have multiple. So if there's 20 people testing, you know, it's on these five, and you can start isolating variables that could be causing a problem.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a killer feature.
It actually is a killer feature. It really is. And when you show people, they just go crazy over it because it's one of the ways that we get back to the how do you build that quality in. When I talk about the no repro scenario, that's not a test feature. That's a quality feature, and that surfaces itself in the developer tools so that you can dive right in as a developer and be able to do that.
Right.
And the same thing with code analysis and how we look at right now the ability to, we have code analysis tools, we've had them in 2008. One of the things we want to make sure you do is you only test the things that have changed.
Mm-hmm.
So we have tools now that can really zero in on, this is what has changed, this is what I test. I don't waste any cycles testing stuff that hasn't changed. We continue to refine that and make that better for everyone involved. So the tester doesn't have to worry about all this other code, I don't know what to do, zero right in. And you know that when you go through the process of write, build, test, and you go through that cycle again and again, and as the code base gets bigger, you don't want to endlessly spend time testing things that you've checked off, and
right.
We know that that's good. So we really created some new tools to do that also.
Excellent. And you mentioned code analysis getting to sort of some of the software quality, I guess, pillar product.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the developer sort of day in, day out, what are the key things that they're going to see?
They're
going to
see a number of enhancements in that. I'm not going to tell you about all of them.
We
want people to discover some of them, and we're not quite ready to show it. But again, the goal is that the developer has the ability in their environment to produce as high a quality piece of code as possible and then hand it off to the tester, and that person can zoom right in on the things that they're going to be able to do that differentiates what they're testing versus having to test a whole bunch of stuff and find all of these simple code errors that the developer could have caught. Getting back to the discussion we're having about the life cycle,
mm-hmm.
This is how you make that life cycle work better.
Right.
I have to be considerate you, developer to tester, architect to developer, and my work should be optimized for what you're going to do next. One of the things one of my peers describes this life cycle management as, it's all about the spaces between you and I rather than what we're each doing, and we sort of how do you break out of the silos? And that's part of the life cycle management is historically we're in silos. We've got the developers and the testers and that. We break people out of the silos and then we worry about how's that information moving back and forth?
Sure.
How are you collaborating? How do I know that when I have a work item that it passes off to you and then you're able to do your part on it? So
a lot of that stuff is Team Foundation Server. So drilling into there, what are some of the key enhancements or killer features that are there?
Yeah, we've talked about
in terms of collaboration.
We've talked about historical debugging, and that's one thing that obviously we need the source code. We are also created some great new tools around branch management and branch visualization. I saw an email earlier today that basically said, you must see the new branch visualization code because it looks awesome. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm hoping that it does look awesome. I have no doubt that it will.
Okay.
But when you start to visualize all of the source trees, that's actually pretty neat. And given me the ability to use TFS as a way to see exactly what's happening in my code base, and everyone can get that perspective, it makes it a much easier experience to produce the right code on the back end. The other things that we've done in TFS, we continue to enhance performance. Everyone wants it to perform better. We've made some great performance enhancements. And across the board, we continue to emphasize enhancing performance. We continue to make it easy for people to check in and check out. We continue to enhance the ability to track your work items. And we know that we have web interfaces for people who want to look at the work items without necessarily having to launch the Visual Studio IDE. That's become even more important. We have some new dashboards coming.
Okay.
We're not showing them just yet. We might be soon. But, again, how do you see the information that's available? So some of the new dashboards will really help you visualize what's going on inside TFS so that everyone in the lifecycle can get their view and be able to take action based
on it. Okay, so it's sort of like perspectives for each user, the project manager, the other person.
Project manager, business analyst, developer, architect, tester,
sure.
Ultimately to the people who are deploying it, up to the guy who's the boss who wants to get the big picture as to what's going on. Those are all the participants in the lifecycle. We think, and this is part of what we're doing with VSTS over the long run,
mm-hmm.
is that everyone should be involved in the lifecycle in some way. It's not just a developer and a tester, and a developer and a tester and an architect. It really continues to branch out, and it gets fundamentally to what is that business problem, and who is involved in making sure that business problem gets identified and gets fixed down the line.
Right.
And we were having a discussion this morning around, how do you deal with requirements? And that is something that we continue to look at, and we work with a lot of partners in the marketplace around requirements. We think it's a critical issue, except for the fact that maybe it's not about requirements. Maybe it's about the fact that more often than not, whether you have good or bad requirements is not the issue. Is the issue that you figured out a way to make sure that you're building what you really think you want to build, and then you can test what you think you built.
Right.
And how do you get past the, it's a requirement, I built it, okay, it's done, to the, this was my business need, I may or may not have great requirements, they may not match up to it, but I understand the business need, I understand the code I built, and is it actually satisfying that as I go through? Businesses and developers, they have a million different ways in which they manage, what am I supposed to build? How am I managing whether I built it? When do I decide to test it? We want to make it such that that's flexible. We continue to find ways to enhance people who use agile processes, for example, as we do in some of our own development. So
real quick, since you did mention agile, and that's always a topic that folks are interested in, for agile developers, what are some of the key things that you think make VSTS a great product for agile devs?
We've had a lot of teams adapt VSTS in the Agile model. We have templates built in that allow people to dive right into Agile development. And what we've been working with is a number of people in the Agile space to see how they're using Team System. Over the next year or so, I think we're going to see a transition in the Agile space that it's people are very, very excited about it. Now they're looking for tools that allow them to do it every single day. I think that transition's taking place right now. They're getting out of super excited, how can I do it? And for the teams that have already been using VSTS in that regards, they're ahead of the curve. We're going to find a lot more people. And it's almost like I don't have to make a lot of changes in my code for as the person who's doing VSTS. What I have to do is get people to see that they have to rethink the usage of the tools. So from our marketing and product team's perspective, we need to do a lot of evangelizing and get people to see the beauty of using VSTS in agile models, using it when they're using Scrum. There's a lot of different ways in which people can use the tool that they haven't tapped into yet. I think I think the burden's on us and our partners and our great users to go out and evangelize. Here's all the things you can do with Team System if you just go ahead and try. And rather than, oh, we built a lot of new features, have at it, it's like, we got a lot of features in there that you may not even be tapping into right now. And I think that's a big opportunity, and we're going to spend a lot of time on that over the next few years as well.
Okay, so other thing, you had mentioned database and developer as one of the things to come back to, so...
Yes. Glad you remembered.
Yeah, it sounds like good stuff, so...
In 2008, VSTS 2008, we have Team Developer, we have Team Data. They've been tools that are separate, they're boxes you buy separately. The Developer box has been for the pure developer. Team Data has been really for those people who are tapping into database applications and managing database applications. Based on all the feedback we've gotten from our customers who said, you know, I'm buying both of those boxes for the same guy, and the same guy's using both of those boxes. We've actually decided to merge them together.
Excellent.
And so there'll be one box, Team Dev, that contains all of the Team Data functionality. That will be part of 2010, but we're actually also doing it for 2008. So all of our existing customers who have software assurance will have the ability, if they have Team Dev, they get Team Data, or vice versa.
When do they get it?
when do they get it? It's October 1st. It'll be available through their MSDN portal.
Excellent. Excellent.
So that's really cool. And
yeah,
it's a way
absolutely.
To enhance the value for everybody, and the feedback has been amazingly positive.
Now, there's been some discussion in terms of features for Team Data on doing things around testing and fabricating fake data and those sort of things for what was, or at least used to be codenamed Rosario. Can you talk at least some of the features going into future Visual Studio 2010 data?
I'm not going to talk about those features today, but we're going to talk to you about that real soon.
Okay.
We want people, and the reason I'm not more than anything else is I've just opened the big door for everybody who's a Team Dev person to go grab Team Data and figure out how to introduce it into their workflow and their lifecycle. I want people to focus on that right now. And then as we get closer to... The next set of announcements around 2010, there'll be a lot more detail in there.
Okay.
Because I've given you a lot of detail already here, and it's just the first of many announcements to come around 2010. We have so much, and obviously you talked about Rosario. 2010 was codenamed Rosario. Codenames go the way of all codenames, and we talk about VS 2010 now. There's so much stuff in there that... I want to give everybody in the marketplace a chance to digest it, get a chance to understand how the pieces come together, give us a chance to present some of it, as we'll be doing some of it at the PDC, we'll be doing some of it at Tech at EMEA this year, and then going forward, we'll talk more and more and sort of reveal more and more of the layers of functionality that we built into what's really an amazing, powerful milestone release for us.
Right. Okay, so I got to ask you a couple more rude cues. I know. So, because customers are going to say, okay, are you changing the pricing? Are there any pricing changes for, because certainly, at least historically, customers...
want to know if we're changing the pricing.
Yeah, so they can start complaining to us early, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, and we are headed down the exact same pricing structure that we have today for the 2010 release. I can't talk about the 2020 release, but the 2010 release, we're going down the same path in terms of the pricing structure, and we believe that there's not going to be any significant changes specific to us. Of course, as you know, Microsoft all the time reserves the right to global pricing
things
changes.
Things could certainly change.
Our goal is to continue to deliver at very similar price points to where we are today. And I'll be honest, we want people to see the value in buying any one of the roles or one of the SKUs that we provide. But let's face it, if you buy the suite, you get all the goodies. And right. the suite is an amazing way to go. Get all the goodies, make the investment. It's not for everybody. But when we find developers or architects or dev managers who have suite, the value is incredible.
Well, also, it's for MCN subscribers. Say if they had a 3-year subscription, they get it, say, this year, 2008, 2009, 2010. Assuming they get the dates right, there's no slippage and it doesn't become 2011, then, hey, you get 2 versions for the price of one.
Yeah, definitely. If you make the investment now, you get to move up the stack. And it's we think the value is really strong. And we hear from our customers that the value is really strong on the pricing side. I'm committed to making sure the value continues to be strong. We don't have any major pricing changes in store.
Now, you mentioned some of the SKUs. It sounds like the SKUs outside of the combination are really the same. Like, there's still TFS. Nothing
really changes. TFS, developer, test, and we continue to believe that that's a great solution. There is MDB, data becomes part of dev.
Okay, and project management stuff is another one. Is that an area that it just comes in the sort of core products, or is that how are you all thinking about that? Because that's certainly been an area that the team's gotten feedback on.
Yeah, project management we've gotten a lot of feedback on, and the feedback has ranged from what are you doing to how are you doing it. The definition of what project management is pretty broad.
Right.
Are you a classic project manager? Are you a business analyst? We've listened to all that feedback, and we believe that there's a number of different ways to solve the problem. Exactly how we're going to solve it, I'm going to tell you about at another time.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks, Norman, for your time.
No, thank you. Everyone should remember.
Give us the summary. Give us,
yes.
What are we going to love?
Visual Studio 2010 or 2010. In fact, everyone should send me an email as to their preferred pronunciation. 2010 or 2010, I'll get it right. When you think about everything we're going to do in VS all up, it's going to be great experience for everybody. We want that for every person that engages in the product, great experience. Democratization. Getting everyone to participate in the ALM, the lifecycle management, taking tools like architecture and making them something everybody can use. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody can be an architect. Taking tests to make it even more powerful. Using the magic box, black box, time machine to be able to say, this is how it was, the situation was when it was tested and the bug was found. This is what it looks like when I'm going to go ahead and fix it. That's another great component of it. And lots more news to come about the product.
Okay.
So we're just now saying, here it is, opening up the covers and saying, look what's inside. But lots more stuff to come. PDC, great opportunities to check it out. Tech Edomia for the folks in Europe, great opportunity to check it out.
Yeah.
And then watch for us to tell you a whole lot more.
Yeah, so the last question. When are people going to get their hands on this? So, do you have a date yet,
or
just stay tuned?
I told you that thing. The camera wasn't working. You missed the whole part where I gave you the exact date. We're not talking about a release date yet.
Okay, well, what about CTPs, just for people to start playing with some of this
there,
stuff?
There is already a CTP in market. There was the April CTP that we want people to...
When's the next one? Or do you not have a...
We don't have a date that we're going to talk about.
Before 2010.
Before 2010. we were having a discussion the other day, and one of my colleagues says, you know, we're not going to ship software to meet the name. We're going to ship software when the software is ready.
Sure.
And you know, watch for it to come in a place that, you know, fits whether it's the name or, you know, the ready. It's going to be ready. There'll be a few more announcements to come before it ships. And as we get closer to things like CTPs and beta, we'll make sure that the market's prepared for that and then let them know when that's going to happen so that they can ramp up.
Excellent. All right. Thanks.
No, my pleasure.